Hey, it's Bill Simmons from The Ringer, and this is a podcast called The Rewatchables. We have been doing it really since 2017. It started with how much we love the movie Heat. We decided to structure a whole podcast with categories: most rewatchable scene, who won the movie, Apex Mountain, what age the best. But here's the thing. If you want the full archive, you can hear them only on Spotify, for free, by the way. So make sure to follow The Rewatchables on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me in the studio, he's not like this because he's in Van Halen. He's in Van Halen because he's like this. It's Andy Greenwald!
It's great. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you, man.
We have a lot to talk about.
You know, this is an atypical recording experience for us because you arrived today. Me and Kaya were here. Chomping at the bit.
That's not atypical, for the record. Me arriving after the two of you is quite typical.
And then you were like,
some news.
Daddy needs to...
Some personal news.
Daddy needs to watch the rest of episode 6 of The Bear. So I watched your face as you watched that episode.
Yeah, my nerves are great. My nerves are calm.
It's only 6 months to Christmas.
I've never been happier to be an only child.
Uh-huh.
You know, not usually something I say, but it's really... These last few moments has really helped me.
It's tough because I'm a childless only child, so right. I have to contemplate like some true Charles Foster Kane shit at the end of my life.
Sitting quietly at a table with a nice meal.
That's not how it feels.
That sounds great. Yeah.
And but seeing like the family get together in the Bear episode 6, we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to talk about the idol. We never stop.
No. And for the record, I feel bad. Like, I do the work, you know, but my excuse is I went to a professional baseball game yesterday.
Yeah, how did that go?
Well, boy, that pitch clock, that really...
So, I mean, honestly, the first time I went to a baseball game with the pitch clock, I was like, did I get my money's worth?
I would say probably not. I did get some free baseball because it was a extra innings affair between the hometown Dodgers, whom I have no feelings about, and the visiting Houston Astros, whom I loathe.
Yeah.
As did the other members of the right field seats where I was sitting, who introduced
my... Did you sit in the bleachers?
No, but like way down on the right field line.
Okay.
Which I wouldn't recommend.
No. A lot of sun now down there.
A, a lot of sun. B, you are just looking at Jason Hayward's stand. You cannot see the batter's box. You cannot see the pitchers. And I'd spent this whole time prepping the girls. And my older daughter was like vaguely expressing... some interest in maybe learning the rules of this thing we were making her do.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, now look at this grass. And so she was like, it's not real grass. And I was like, ah-ha-ha, when I was a youth, there was a fake grass that gave everyone on the Phillies brain cancer. Next subject. The point being, she learned a lot
Don't
of words.
Don't you dare desecrate Veterans Stadium.
It's true. Have you been reading the reporting?
What reporting?
The Philadelphia Inquirer reported that the AstroTurf on...
At
the vet is why, like... 11 members of the Phillies have had glioblastomas, including Darren Dalton and John Vukovic. This is real.
Is this from like the Epic Times? Like, no.
No! It's from this is real and horrifying.
Okay, I didn't see this.
But separate and apart from that, the Astros, and when the Astros are winning, really brings out like a brotherhood of men. Like just like a real civic spirit.
Yeah.
And Kyle Tucker's last name does rhyme with
some cool stuff.
Some other words.
Yeah.
So... I say we spent a little time in the Baseline Club, which had some free soft serve. So that was cool. But the other thing about baseball, Chris, and this is what people tune in for. Uh-huh. I know Kaya is riveted, is in addition to all these other cockamamie, like pitch clock rules, whatever, bigger bases, do you know that they start extra innings with a free runner?
Yeah.
So there's just a dude on second?
Yeah.
Hanging out on
they
second?
They got to wrap it up, man.
And in this Baseline Club where we were taking solace from the sun, there was a little boy who appeared to have no parents. He was wearing a Mookie Betts shirt. He was young. And he was watching the game, but he had no one talking to him, so he just kept talking to us.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, see, I had read that there's
about
this
what?
Free base runner about the failed coup.
Did you guys know that the implosion they experienced on the sub happened faster than human minds can process?
He was like, I was like, oh, so there's a free runner on second. And he was like, no, the commercials, they take too long. Number 11 got a hit. And I was like, son, that's just simply not true. Rob Manfred is on the case. That's, anyway. I don't know what we're talking about anymore, but...
Why did you make this boy sound like little Zelensky?
He kind of was. Like, he had a lisp. Okay. Not like Zelensky, but it had a vague, you know... It was sweet. He wanted to talk to me about... And then, like, the inning ended, and the Astros were winning, and he was like, that's game over. And I was like, it's not. It's not. They let the home team...
So this kid had a Mookie Betts jersey, didn't understand what innings were.
No, but again, in his defense, they've changed
the... No, this is the problem with the American education system.
With like the focus on
we value uh-huh. like the accoutrement. We like it's all about yeah. acquiring grails, you know, getting your jersey, but you don't know what the actual bread and butter rules of the game.
I've heard
are.
You've had a lot of opinions about grails recently.
I have.
That's something you've really been thinking about. last baseball related question, like Chris, how do you feel about? Look, we're American men of a certain age. We like to go to the old ball yard, maybe have a drink, a beer, mm-hmm. cold beer. In my mind, the beer you get is like. The dude with the backpack at, you know, just like fills you up like a Bud Light or whatever. No, not like nitrous backpack. That's in the parking lot. I mean like the beer, like just like draft beer.
Uh-huh.
But the move towards like the gas can
yeah,
that costs
yeah,
like $27.
Yeah. The Modelo the size of your arm.
Which yeah. is really exciting for the first 2.5 minutes. And then it's just tepid and big.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. I think the idea is that you're supposed to crush that.
The can when you're done on
no,
your
I
forehead?
No, I think you're supposed to move through it a little faster than we maybe do in this day and age.
Do you think I carry myself in the world as someone who crushes...
22 ounces of Modelo, just like pure...
In direct sunlight? Like, everyone hydrated on this row?
That
thanks,
would explain
fellas.
Why you thought that kid had no parents.
Yeah.
You were just walking up to random boys. Like,
do you have sunscreen on, son? And I was like, yes, the Astros... are known cheaters, but are you known hydrators? I'm fun, is the end of this story. I'm
they
fun.
Should
so
do
I didn't
another,
finish watching the bear.
Another Eastbound and Down season where you're like the baseball explainer, you know?
People love it. There is, though, I will say that like I was trying to explain extra innings to my children, and then I stopped speaking, and I heard vague susurration voices, basically, of like other fathers trying to explain extra innings to their children. It doesn't go great.
I don't really have an entertaining story from the weekend.
It's just that if you try to explain baseball to someone who truly doesn't care...
I've done it before to English people.
It's worse than if you're yeah. trying to explain a dream you
but
had.
For English people, you could just be like, it's like cricket, but faster.
There was the moment when I lost them when I was like, they're... Because they understand three strikes and you're out. And I was like, if it's not a strike, it's called a ball. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what are they throwing before then?
Right.
You're done.
You're getting who's on first territory.
You're done.
So you watched the Dodgers. Did the Dodgers win? I didn't check
no.
the score. You got home. Any fireworks?
No. That was the reason why we were staying that long. But no, the fireworks only on certain nights.
And then you make yourself a cup of chamomile tea.
You want to talk?
You know what? I bet Tedros is a Padres fan, just to zag.
A Padres fan? Oh, yeah. 1,000,000%.
He's into Machado, you know?
But he wears the camo jersey. You know what I mean? The camo Machado jersey.
The troops. That's a part that we hope we get more of in season two, is the Weeknd's character yeah. in The Idol being like a super big support the troops
I
guy.
Love it because the thing is, there's so much more road for this character.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. I thought you were going to do a zag I was hoping you wouldn't do, which is like, so you make yourself some tea, tell the children to join you on the couch, and like Ashley Schaefer, BMW, you let the children watch. No,
I don't think that even you, adventurous,
even
and would allow your children to set foot in the world of The Idol. And that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. But I did. Then, yeah, I fired up TV And because I am, and because I am your friend, I watch The Idol first.
You can do whatever you want, man. I want you to feel like this is like a, like you have equity in this podcast, you know, and we have equity in our relationship.
I've spoken to Daniel Ek and I do not. I do not, but thank you.
Idol episode 4. We got 2 left after this. Mm,
what a journey it's been.
A turn towards, in some ways, like straight up film noir in this one, you know?
Really? That's generous. Please continue.
Well, it's just a genre. You know what I mean? Mm. But I think that the machinations of both the Tedros character and also his effect on Jocelyn, are you just...
I'm loving this.
No, you do it then.
No, explain. Explain.
I'm not... Look.
You're like the third man, this was visual entertainment filmed with a camera. Yeah, no, it was. In the sense that actors were performing scenes.
Much like Casablanca, 2 people kissed in this show.
Yep.
Yeah. And in very similar to Singing in the Rain, there was music.
Yes.
So really.
And much like The Green Mile, someone was shocked. Right?
Yeah.
I could do this. This is fun.
What was your favorite part about this episode?
When the credits came on at the end.
Okay.
No. Okay. What's my favorite part?
I'm challenging you to find some, give me your redemptive qualities here.
Wow.
In the show, not in yourself.
Oh, I think I'm a good listener. Yeah. I've got equity in 1 mildly successful podcast. Just learned about it.
A comprehensive understanding of the game of baseball.
Especially the new rules. Yeah. Chris?
No, it's funny. It's
let
like,
me begin.
I
OPS.
Did the exact same thing that you did when I went and saw the Diamondbacks play the Dodgers early in the year. I came out. I was just like, guys, I got to talk about these rules for like 3 days. And then nobody cared.
I definitely said the word suicide squeeze out loud.
Oh, we're not allowed to say that anymore.
Oh, that didn't occur to me. Do we not say that anymore? Oh, right. No. I just meant I was wrong.
Do they call it a suicide squeeze anymore?
Do you feel like Rob Manfred is woke? Is this
Rob Manfred has the woke mind virus?
Is this where we're going to avoid talking about last night's episode of The Idol?
You're the one you're on the clock. I asked you to give me your favorite part of last night's episode aside from the credits rolling.
Okay.
Did you like Divine Randolph? Because I thought she was quite awesome in this episode.
Okay, yeah. She was, I mean...
I thought the Destiny plot would be like... This is what made me almost like have the film noir thought, is like she is almost like a private detective investigating this. And I was like, oh, this would have been kind of a cool wrinkle. They've obviously like, they've had Haim and her check in on this. They know what's happening. But almost, it would have been an interesting, I think because of the bear, I'm thinking a lot about POV and I'm thinking a lot about like how different shows could be shaken up in the way that the bear so casually changes the entire chessboard episode to episode. And she just brought a completely different energy and I thought was the audience avatar in a lot of ways. Like she's seasoned, she's been in the business, she understands what she's talking about, but at the same time, she's like, what the fuck is happening here?
But also, what the fuck is she doing? And what the fuck is she talking about or thinking? There are 2 tracks to talk about this show.
Okay.
This was the episode where I was like, I think this is pretty reprehensible. Like,
this
truly.
Is the episode that you thought that? Yeah, okay.
I did, because I was trying to give it the benefit of the doubt.
No, you weren't.
I was for 3 weeks. I was.
Well, you were watching it. Doesn't mean you're giving it the benefit of the doubt.
No, I was like, there may be some... I was trying to not assume ill intent. I don't think there's ill intent, but I was like, they are... I could try to see, like you were just doing, the shape of... the influences or the type of story that maybe interested them.
Yeah.
And are they steering towards that? In which case, some of the things that rubbed me the wrong way or I didn't think were working maybe could be excused narratively or thematically or whatever. This is the one, to me, where the wheels fell off.
Is that because you just hate seeing Mike Dean's talents wasted in this way?
I feel like Mike Dean was probably sharing his truth.
Does Mike Dean know he was on a show?
So Mike Dean, hero of Tedros, friend of Tedros, truly, you know, a legend in that, like, coming from the Houston scene, like, plays, like, with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Kanye, Travis Scott, a little singer-songwriter known as The Weeknd.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, so he's playing a character of a guy who just bongs it up all the time. And then I was like, let me Google Mike Dean.
And marijuana?
No, just Google Mike Dean and be like, is there something about his character? Is he a prankster?
Yeah.
You know? And then it's like, Mike Dean has released 4 solo studio albums. 420 on April 20th, 2020. 422 on April 22nd, 2021. Smoke State 42222 on April 22, 2022. And 423 on April 29th, 2023. So
Yeah.
To answer your question, I think he thought he was at a weekend recording session at the Weeknd's house where he's been before.
Yes.
And his look of, oh, you know what I enjoyed? I enjoyed his look of bemusement when he was tickling the ivories.
And Weeknd was karateing Rob?
Yes. I enjoyed that. So thank you for steering me to that answer.
Okay. You were saying how this show is reprehensible.
I was.
Yeah.
But that's not where I want to begin because I don't think that's as interesting. And I don't want to be a ball stopper in your offense.
That's okay, because today, I know that that was a concern of yours, that your negativity might be like slowing things down. So what we need to talk about is what superhero you think Jocelyn's ex-boyfriend was playing.
Oh, well, first of all, he's a great actor. Just across the board, just very expressive, and definitely should not have had his mask on for as much of the film as he did. Because that guy was just giving just shades. You know what I mean? It's like, what is his motivation? What? Tell me more about his backstory. Is he, was he, would he be invited to the Berzotto Christmas dinner?
Sure.
And like, could he hang? A lot of latex, as we're told. So, and I don't think he can do the Whedon banter, so I don't think he's MCU.
Okay.
And so also, The Idol is a Warner show.
You know? You think he's DC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't
think... Do you think he gets killed in the first scene of Peacemaker season two or something?
I mean, that would be a great out for me from this, because I don't know who lives and dies in Peacemaker. The problem with the show for me, Chris, at this moment is, because it's going to run for a long time, clearly, it's completely fucking incoherent. It's completely incoherent. And
so give me an example of what you're talking about. It's wasting, like the Xander stuff?
And it's wasting everyone's time, frankly, with the resources that it has to be doing this. And I think that sucks. Is Tedros a compelling and charismatic cult leader who draws people to him? Potentially, because that's what the show is built around, this idea. He has apparently collected a menagerie of broken toys, all of whom are geniuses, per Destiny, right?
That Crocodile song was good.
Okay, we'll circle back to that. Also, he is a fucking clown. And in interviews, definitely not face-saving interviews, Abel's going around being like, oh, he's supposed to be a dork. This is supposed to be ridiculous. Okay, so he's ridiculous too. So then Jocelyn is ridiculous for falling for him. And
Jocelyn, so, I'm not sure Jocelyn has a lot of relatable real-world experiences. You know, so I don't know that she has the best like radar for
as a perpetually nude cipher. I agree with you because the show has absolutely no interest in anything about her interiority unless she's live streaming. Has there been a scene through four episodes of the show where she's been alone expressing anything about what's existing inside of her?
When she like wakes up in between when Leia like gives her coffee and opens the curtains.
Someone else wakes her up.
See ya.
So again, okay. So in this space, I feel like if we were debating Sam Levinson, like in the like British Parliament, I think he might say, exactly, this is a broken person who has never been left alone to become a person and is so dependent on others doing things for her that she ends up in this debauched and debased and manipulated state. Okay. So it's an emotional drama about someone's abuse. But no, it's a satire, we're told. Okay, so it's a satire. So what's it satirizing? Is it satirizing...
Well, I mean, you're getting into like a semantic debate about how it's being presented and how it's being...
I just want to know what it is.
Right.
Is this a... Is it a erotic thriller noir? Is it a satire of superficiality of celebrity and stardom in the pop music business?
It can't
business?
Be both.
Is it... It could be both, but I think that it's nothing because it has no point of view. If its point of view is, look at these shitty people, well, you could just say that in a Dumois post. You don't actually need to spend $200 million to make a TV show about it. What I'm trying to explain is the reason I'm rejecting the show at this moment is not because I'm out on the Weeknd's performance. I'm because I've reached this point where I believe the show actually has no point of view and is about nothing.
So... Well, the reason I brought up Divine Randolph in the first place was that she did an interview with Vulture this morning. That was about the production of it. And she refuted some of the reporting in the Rolling Stone, or at least from her experience, it was like a really safe set or whatever. But she did talk about how it was about 50% scripted.
Yes, that is clear.
And I do think that this was an episode where some of the precision that could have come with scripting would have been a little bit helpful.
Yeah, this is what happens if we stay on strike.
There are things that There are things that just didn't feel like they were in the same show or episode.
Clearly,
and
true.
There were things that I was like, oh, like during that whole Xander getting shock collared thing, I was very...
Say that again, please.
So Xander, yeah. Who is Jocelyn's creative director.
Troye Sivan, who actually I think is one of the better actors on the show.
And he is caught singing in the shower by Tedros. And Tedros is like, why don't you sing? And he's like, oh, I tore my vocal cords. And then it turns out that he and Jocelyn, it sounds like they maybe were like on a Nickelodeon
yeah,
show
or
together.
Yeah, a Disney show.
And Jocelyn's mother outed him. And it kind of basically ended his career prematurely. But then there is this like murky history between him and Jocelyn mm-hmm. because even though this is the case, he's also been living with Jocelyn and her mother for a long time and witnessed all this abuse that Jocelyn is talking about, but was also being kept under the thumb of this family and wasn't allowed to sing and had to mm-hmm. sign a contract, or so he says. And then on the flip side of it, Jocelyn's like obviously starting to blame him primarily for no one stepping up and saying, like, you need to get out from under this situation with your mom. She's abusing you, et cetera. And just because we all make money off of you doesn't mean that that's okay. And then there's just like this meltdown. And I was like, this is actually pretty interesting. Like these two, one failed, one mm-hmm. still shining child stars who went through this like incredibly traumatic event, but also like the fog of memory that happens
yeah.
about it. Like there are little like strands that I think probably could have benefited from not being like, and then what's more important is that the weekend is going to physically break this guy down and turn him into another one of his troll bots who's then going to get Rob
yes.
in trouble by
the you are picture. You are right. When you have this much talent and this many resources, you can't help but turn up potentially good things. You'd stumble into them. And I completely agree with you that from, like, if you took it all the way back to Jump, Sam Levinson, with his, what interests him and what motivates him and his style, making a show about the afterlives of teen pop stars
mm-hmm.
feels almost too natural. That is a show. And it is a show that is of interest to people and has a world that can touch reality a little bit before it veers off into Basic Instinct land. But that isn't this show, because this is The Weeknd's vanity project.
Right.
Fundamentally, this is The Weeknd's vanity project, and it derails everything. And I don't know how much of any of these other things were in Amy Simons' version. It's easy to hold that up as being, quote-unquote, better. We don't know. It could have been a disaster in
sure.
its own right. But that did feel like it was a version that might be willing to focus or prioritize stories other than Tedros being compelling, scary, or a dink.
Right.
Because that's what the camera is most interested in the show. That's what the edit is. And I think you're 100% right. This episode had a lot of scenes of Tedros and Jocelyn fighting that clearly weren't part. They were just acting exercises or whatever. Like how many days this went on with
right.
Mike Dean is unclear.
Right.
There's moments like Leah's behavior is totally inconsistent and bizarro, where she is chafing and ready to go. And then she's in bed with Isaac. And then she's getting super soaked with
tequila. Yeah.
You know, all of these are apparently just moments apart.
Yeah. And then there's like the whole like Diane is with Tedros, but has now taken over Jocelyn's mainstream career, but
yes.
is now coming back to kind of talk to Jocelyn, but also seems to be surprised that she has arrived at Jocelyn's house to find a party going on and was in love with Tedros.
Yes.
And now Tedros is with Jocelyn. Like there's just like a lot of like stuff that's sort of subterranean in the show that I am actually interested in. You know, I think it could, in a weird way, this show could use a little bit more TV in it. There are some yeah. things that I think that it just does, that Levinson just does very well. Like, for instance, like even the cutting back and forth, somewhat playing with the timeline of like, this conversation is happening with like Leia having her conversations with Tedros, but then like cutting ahead in time and then cutting away to where Divine Randolph is talking to Haim, and like
yeah.
all that stuff is kind of like just, wow, you're like, it's well done. It just kind of, I find most of the episodes actually hit the same point in the second half
yeah.
where it becomes like you're saying a little bit more of like, are we just doing acting exercises? Are we just doing improv games here? And it gets a little bit more complicated. And I think, or not complicated, it gets a little bit less, there's less to hang on to there. And you know, this was not my favorite of these episodes. I think that I don't really know where it goes from here or what it does next, but I still was like curious about it.
I think that your point is a good one in that, like, virtuoso, being a virtuoso at anything is super cool, but it just, if it ends up with a bunch of people just soloing, like, congratulations, you're Steve Vai.
Right.
Like, with this raw footage of interesting people doing crazy things like having a Hollywood party and ingesting cocaine, first of all, whoa, this shit is pushing boundaries.
Right.
You can cut it up with needle drops and weekend covering John Lennon songs. Like, you can do all of this and make it look interesting and compelling, and you can do it with some artistry. I'm not saying that it's not. This is, I think there is a cynicism somewhere in here, but I'm not sure if it's in the filmmaking or if it's in the, like, the HBO being like, sure,
yeah,
we'll just rubber stamp this and put this out on Sunday night. There are individual performances that are good, and I think that I certainly wasn't there. I go to baseball games and have a cup of tea. But all accounts that I've heard on the record and off the record from people involved in the show is that they were just like, let's just see what we can make here. And let's scramble it.
Yeah, we don't have to leave because it's weekend's house.
And the people on the show did not know what show they were on. They did not have, even like the professional actors who have won Emmy Awards, like people who've done things.
Yeah.
You know, or like, I don't know if Hank Azaria got the sides for what was happening in the studio that day, for example.
Right.
Good things have come from that type of arrangement, but that is the feeling here. And it does rankle me that at the end of this, it does feel like two rich, talented men having carte blanche to be like, let's see what we get. Let's just see what we can get here.
I don't think that being two rich, talented men in Hollywood makes them special.
I don't think it makes them special, but I think then having to sit here and be like, that's really interesting what they came up with. Nobody made you do this. All of this was enabled and all of this was a choice, you know? And we get into this episode, the Lily Rose Depp Jocelyn of it all. I mean, it's just like, what is even going on here? You know, she bought in and she's given it her all.
Yeah.
And it's for this. I think it's a bummer.
She's not in on the Rob part, right? The Rob, like entrapping Rob with the pictures of that woman, right?
Right. Well, I mean, her motivations are crystal clear throughout.
Right.
So I feel confident.
I'm trying to figure out whether she's like Breaking Bad at all.
No, because I don't know if you heard this John Lennon song that The Weeknd is singing is Jealous Guy. So I'm putting...
He's jealous, right?
I'm putting one and one
but
together.
She was also like, keep shocking that dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, I know. That was heavy. That was heavy when she was just like, you fucking suck. Let's torture you.
Are you being serious?
No.
Okay.
But all the way back to the Destiny thing, which is really good performer that I like to watch. Doing something relatively interesting on the show, snooping around. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can almost imagine Sam Levinson being like, you are the detective now in this house of hers. Like, that is a cool framing.
Right.
That's not what this episode was.
And her having to basically, like, to humor Tedros while trying to figure out, like, what it is that's, like, going on here.
But also, is she trying to figure it out? Because I think this show's central message is that everyone's shitty and trying to profit. And when she's just like... So I watched the scene with her and Cassie, Crocodile Girl. Is that her name, Cassie?
Chloe.
Chloe?
Yeah.
Sorry, just, again, compelling characters that just...
Because there's a Cassie in Euphoria.
Okay. When she's just like playing the song and is like not a well person, and then later Destiny is like, she's incredible. She sings poetry from her heart. And I'm like, walk me through this. Because you're right, she shows up being like, this is some real fucking shit. This guy's a criminal. And then by the end of it, she both hates him, but she's like, man, this guy really gets good music out of people. And by the way,
yeah,
all this music sucks. And maybe they'll come out and be like, newsflash, dorks, the music was supposed to suck.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Do you feel like they're making hits here?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't listen to pop music anymore, so I don't really know like what
I do
is like banging on the radio right now.
The Freak song's all right.
Well, that's fucking Diane's song now.
Yes, and look,
World Class Center belongs to Diane.
I am a Blackpink fan.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
Wow. Okay.
Blackpink gets airtime in the family car driving to school. Like, Blackpink's cool. And when I watch Jenny act, I think Blackpink is a good musical group.
Uh-huh.
That's my takeaway.
All right, so let's put a cork in it there.
It's hard for me.
I know. Do you want to keep going?
Shots. This is a party. Do a shot with me.
I would.
I'm done.
Let's pivot to The Bear.
Okay.
So we're going to do 4, 5, and 6.
That was like your march to Moscow just now.
Was it?
Yeah, you made it like a little bit. Then you heard, and then I was like, you heard me. You were like, I'm good.
No, what I don't want to do is I want you to be in a good place to talk about the bear.
I think I should be riled up.
You are riled up.
Set the buzzer.
Apparently, rich guys aren't allowed to make TV shows anymore. That's the takeaway here.
No, only rich guys make TV shows. Only rich guys or soon to be rich guys. I'm just saying.
You're taking your sweater off. Like, are you getting hot? Are you
getting heated in here. Okay. It's fucking summertime. I'm recording live from Dodger Stadium. People think we're in person? No. No. I'm just doing batting practice.
There's a couple.
My comment about that.
Are we still talking about the idol? No, I like doing this.
But just to clarify.
Okay. What do you care?
I'm just saying those two dudes.
You're like, this is reprehensible. And you're like, wait, let me not be taken out of context.
Yeah.
Those two dudes, what?
Because here's the thing. I worry. Chris, yeah. I worry. You know, we talk into microphones. We can't control the dissemination of information.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not Vladimir Putin. We can't do it. And
that guy has an iron grip on just, the way information flows out of Russia.
Absolute lockdown. Yeah. Remarkable.
Incredible comms.
Last week. Well, Destiny and Chaim are his managers. They're like, let's see where this goes.
Yo, this fucking guy, Putin, is incredible.
It's like they cut away from Putin and Mike Dean is in the background.
Yeah.
The exhaling smoke. Last week, we were like, let me be clear with you, America. Secret invasion is bad.
Yeah.
And here's why it's bad. And then I see a comment online being like, those fuckers would love the show if it didn't have Skrulls in it. They're lying.
I agree.
No, it's a bad show.
Oh,
and it's a bad show because
of... But I would be
of,
way more into it if there weren't aliens in it.
Yeah, but what if it was the same show?
But I didn't see this comment. Was it thoughtful?
What, you mean a comment on the internet?
Yeah.
It was very nuanced and thoughtful.
Was it on Facebook?
I'm just saying I only get my information from Facebook. I don't know where you get yours. So, anyway...
The For You tab on Twitter.
One of my favorite things about Facebook, by the way, as you know, is like it just feeds you insane things that it thinks you will like. And most of them now are related to...
But Andy, you obviously click on that stuff because you screenshot it and send it
I don't
to me.
Click.
So they clearly are like, this is working.
I
we
don't
should
click.
Keep sending
How
him.
Dare you? I don't click.
Okay.
I just... Most of it's about Legend of Zelda now.
They can tell when you're hovering.
Well, most of it's about Legend of Zelda when I'm hovering.
Okay.
Because that is really what's dominating my household. But then now, it's stuff... Like yesterday, it was just like Jean-Claude Van Damme fan club. And it was like a picture of him and his children. And I did click on it because I was like, what? It had like 700 comments. And the comments were all, beautiful family.
You are going to get so many JCVD promoted posts now.
It's so funny. Anyway, I just want to be clear. That was bad, that show. Uh-huh. And it wasn't just because of Skrulls. And I want to be clear. I'm not anti-rich men making television shows.
It's okay.
Okay? There are many, many rich men making nice TV shows. I'm saying they have carte blanche.
Some of them are your close friends.
Some of them have been on this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, this is what they're doing with it. And it just feels like ego and taking up space. And that it's a bummer because I don't see what's
being done. I greatly
prefer
this to Secret Invasion in terms of use of time and money.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm on the fence.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a provocative comment.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth, so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
I want to talk about The Bear because I want to talk about good television. I want to talk about great television.
Okay. See, that's why we did The Idol first.
Do you want to talk about the episode that was made in a lab for you, which was episode 4, Honeydew?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to talk about the episode that everybody is talking about, which is episode 6, Fishes?
Well, I got to be me. I only want to talk about 5.
Of course.
I find it hard to talk about... I don't think you can talk about one without the other.
Let's speak in generalities before we get into specifics then.
Because broadly, one of the things that I love about the show and its delivery of information and story and narrative and character is the way everything that defines the people we've already fallen in love with is connected to other pieces of them. And so the fussiness, the prissiness, the tweezeriness of Copenhagen cuisine as presented in the show and the life that Carmi has chosen where, you know, you can just use blue tape and your own strength of will to make something that takes 7 seconds, 5 seconds. All of that is because what eating is for him emotionally is episode 6.
Mm-hmm.
One is connected to the other, and they are both extremes, you know? And so I loved the juxtaposition of these episodes, especially doing it the way we're doing it, which is as a coursed out meal.
Well, I mean, we didn't actually know this going into it, but so far we've chosen wisely
with the breaks. Like, yeah.
Ending at 3, ending at 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll do the rest of the season for Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But it is actually told in these very discrete chapters in some ways.
So let's talk about 4. Let's talk about, let's talk about Marcus walking the same cobblestone streets that I've walked. Heartbaggery. Been there. The cardamom bun, sure.
So is that where Will Poulter is working?
I think so. I couldn't really tell.
Okay.
He goes to Heart. Marcus brings home a bunch of pastries, including the famous cardamom bun from Heart.
Not a big cardamom guy.
Sotto voce.
Me either.
Cool that it has its own bun.
But I just, in Sweden, I was just like, I know that fika is a thing,
yeah.
And I enjoy the actual, like, act of it, but cardamom is not my jam.
What about cardamom jam?
Spread
in a thin layer. I actually don't have the answer as to whether that's where he is, because it does seem like he's working it's a bakery. They're serving plated desserts, so
yeah.
I don't know what it is.
I think he's working in desserts in a very nice restaurant.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. And then we see him... one of the amazing things about that city, it is that beautiful, it is that incredible, but it also is that open and friendly, at least in what I've observed and what I've heard from friends who are chefs in terms of walking into places and the community where, like, if you could go to Noma, you could probably be seated in some ways if you have connections or if you have a chef friend. But
yeah, it's like the Magic Castle.
But more than that, it's exactly like the Magic Castle. But even if you don't go to eat there, you can go to the gardens and see what they're doing.
So I could go to Noma.
If you were a cook, yeah.
And so it's just regular homies can't go to Noma and just be like, I'd like to observe.
I mean, I could send a DM.
No, I want to know.
I could DM Renee.
It's not just rich guys who get to make television, okay? I get to go to Noma.
Yeah, but only rich guys get to go to Noma. Gatekeeping. Sorry, pal.
Is Noma still open?
Yeah.
I thought he was wrapping up.
No, they're back from Kyoto. It's a summer menu, vegetarian menu, just starting this
week.
Wait,
I thought the whole thing was he was closing Noma. I thought he was like, I've said what I wanted to say with this place.
I think this iteration of Noma is ending in 25 with the seasonal menus, but...
2025?
Yeah.
Okay. They're that far out?
Let me tell you something about my guy, Renee. No quitting him. No quitting him.
He's got that dog in him.
He's got that
dog
in him.
If you see the x-ray of Renee Redzepi, you see a dog in his heart.
Kind of, yes. Kind of, okay. Yes. So no, I think that was a little overheated.
Oh, I thought it was like the whole thing was like, my statement is complete. We're closing Noma, and I'm going to like rethink how I want to like approach food.
I think he's rethinking how he wants to approach restaurant dining.
Yeah.
But I think...
Is he going to move more into like kind of like rustic
fast casual
food?
Fast casual.
Yeah, just like, it's just like big plates you can share.
Bowls.
Yeah,
everything
let
in a bowl.
Tell you a little bit about what we're doing here.
No, but I mean, it's also so much bigger than just that place now in terms of like the garden and the fermentation, like the projects.
For sure.
And things. So, but that it is this kind of magical community. And I loved that Marcus gets to have this experience. And I especially love the echo of it when in 6, Carmi is like, it's a magical place.
Yeah.
And I lived
and
on a boat
like,
and I fed a ghost cat.
Yeah, invisible cat. Let's not put Coco in the ground just yet.
No, I'd like to break some news here.
So you think Coco is left this plane?
No, sometimes, I don't know if you ever do this, but as a podcaster, I say something and then I can't back down.
I think I'm well aware that that's...
I think it's finally time to be honest.
Okay.
You know, and show some humility.
I think that the...
Do you want me to tell you all the places I've been?
Let's save that for like a little bit of an appendix at the
Let's
end.
Not do that.
We could also do top 50 replacement songs. We could do a bunch of different things.
Okay.
Top 5 holiday dinners with the family.
Yeah. Top 5 solo Lindsey Buckingham tracks.
Yeah.
Because not just Holiday Road, but I Want You crops up in 6.
I think that the way that they laid out this season
mm-hmm.
and the way that they have figured out a way to sustain a show that in its initial conception and in its initial presentation was like burning so bright you wondered how long it could sustain mm-hmm. itself. And now they have figured out this way, not with like gimmicks, but with actual like, what if we did this with this person? Or what if we went back to this point in time? Or mm-hmm. what if this person went on this adventure? And the growth for the show between season 1 and 2 is remarkable in that way. You know what I mean? Like the way that they were like, okay, we'll probably do a 3rd season. People really like this show.
Oh yeah.
How do we make this interesting for ourselves, interesting for the people playing these parts, interesting for the viewers, but not getting away from what this show is about. And I was just blown away. I was blown away by these 3 episodes in that sense, you know, and which isn't to say take away anything from the individual episodes, because in a lot of ways, like, yeah, Marcus has like basically the best possible experience in Copenhagen, but I thought it was a beautiful depiction of like the kind of clarity
mm-hmm.
and self-discovery that sometimes happens with the dislocation of traveling someplace for a long time, you
yeah.
know, and being away and kind of seeing yourself in a different light and seeing what you do in a different light.
And a beautiful performance by Lionel Boyce, who's mm-hmm. just great and has the exact right demeanor in a way. It's a strange word to use, I guess, but you feel his excitement and a little bit of insecurity, not necessarily as a performer, but maybe as a cook,
mm-hmm.
like in these spaces, and how does he take up space in these spaces? And Will Poulter was really good too, because he has to move in a way that is plausible, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious what he did to prepare for that himself. But he has to have authority.
He's got to be obviously better at mm-hmm. it than Marcus yeah. in the beginning of it.
Yeah, he has to be believable. So it was lovely. It's a lovely episode. But I think to the other point you're making, all of the best shows aren't really about what they pretend to be about, you know. Succession, the business part was interesting and compelling and made for great drama, but it was about the emotional state of the
yeah.
family. I love Industry because of the amazing writing and performances, but mostly because the conceit of money and that level of finance
puts
the people at the highest possible stakes of themselves.
Yeah.
So that what we see is just so intense and interesting.
Yeah, because betrayal gets magnified in a
yeah.
situation
and,
like that.
And what's so incredible about the bear is that people, I mean, food is abstract. I mean, it's everything and it's also absolutely nothing. And that's why you talk about like, well, you don't really remember what you ate at that restaurant that was the greatest meal of your life. You remember how you were treated and who you were with and the conversation, and et cetera, et cetera. This show has found a way to make food both, to make it central unifying principle, but immediately understood that it's never going to be just about what's on the plate.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of the disparate stories that fed into what is served to someone, presumably in the final episode of this season. It's so much more than just chopping and searing.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that there's something about this season and about this this group of episodes specifically, but the in season in its entirety, that's about what you owe your past and like what you owe your sort of roots and your origin story and like, you know, your traumas, but also just like, you're a guy from Chicago who makes desserts. Like, could you be a guy who lives in Copenhagen who makes desserts?
Yeah.
Well, how does that change how you look at doing what you do? And there's so much stuff in this season that's about the idea of failure versus the idea of success and what constitutes what. I thought that the Luca stuff where he's talking about, like, I thought I was the best, and then I cooked next to somebody who made me realize not only was I not, I was never going to be. And I got so much better just by chasing that person. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think I can't help but watch the show and think about the making of the show or thinking about the making of anything, you know, and how hard it is to do something, especially something so forward-facing like cooking or making art, where you're like, the whole point of this is that it's supposed to be consumed at a certain point.
Yeah.
And like what goes into that and what goes in, what it does to the people who are doing it. And I think it just is the most thought-provoking look at something like that while also maintaining this very, very, very strong bone structure of a TV show that I really like about people that I care about.
And food is also so interesting and in some ways unique in that it is a passport to a very odd and exclusive world. Because the path that Tina and Sydney and Marcus and Carmen are taking to get to these places, these cities, these venues, these ingredients, these opportunities, is in no way the same path that the people who are going to pay $200 for a tasting menu at the Bear or wherever else are taking. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the extremity of the disconnect, first of all, from the Berzato family dinner to when he's serving the United Nations in New York, presumably a few months later, right? Or the, not that Marcus has a bad life in Chicago, but what dominates his thinking in taking care of his mother and getting on the L and all of those things versus living on a boat and just thinking about the way something tastes, operates. It's very different. And the kind of, you know, it's work. It's not always art. And that collision too is so interesting and so fascinating to observe and so keenly observed by the show. It was really lovely. I also think that it's just in terms of structure, the show really excels. It's, you know, until episode six, it's relatively standard, short episodes. And the little hint, you know, Sydney on the FaceTime, you know, just to remind you about what's going on. It's just very artfully done. So it doesn't feel like we're just taking this little trip because we could. It feels connected.
I also think it's worth mentioning that Rami Yusuf directed the fourth episode and Christopher Storer worked on Rami. And I thought that the visual sensibility was different, but still of a piece of the Bear, you know? So you get to see the way another person would view this world. Obviously, it helps to not be in Chicago and not be in the restaurant, not be in the kind of chaotic world of that. But it kind of suggests what the world outside of the Bear looks like. It's something that I think that The Idol could benefit from, for instance, is a couple of more trips away from the house. You know, like, I think The Idol is suffering by the fact that it's like, well, we could just shoot at Abel's house, so we could just shoot all day long. And like,
also, we burned our budget for locations when we shot the show the first time and then threw it out.
Sure. But like, that is a show that it would be like, the my favorite part of The Idol was when she went shopping, you know? And my favorite parts of The Bear are the fact that even though it's about this restaurant and making this place, I don't know if you could do 10 episodes nonstop with people screaming at each other and drills going off. I don't know if it would be a fun thing to watch. Now, it's not like the diversions that they take are always like calming, as we will talk about with six, but five is a really good example of that. It's like, can Carmi go to a fucking party or what?
Because he never has,
yeah,
apparently. The thing, and I think we touched on this a little bit last week, and just moving to episode five for a second, like when the order comes in from the floor of the restaurant to the kitchen, you have a certain amount of time and you have to deliver a really good version, if not a consistently great version, of the thing that they've asked for. And I think about that with the way the show nails opportunities time and time again, where you set up, and we were praising Molly Gordon in that great meat cute with the what's he holding? He's holding
vanilla ice cream,
but it's not.
It's not.
It's not ice cream. It's veal stock. And she's "Are you making it?" And he's like, "Oh, that would taste good, actually." You have the meat cute, and so then
that sounds like it would taste fucking gross, honestly.
Well, you haven't been to Copenhagen, Chris. I feel like
do they do a lot of veal stock Sundays there?
I don't want to like get into the details, okay. You know. But before 25, I think you should go and see what's happening. You know, like over there, like live in a boat with the dead cats. Sorry. What I'm saying is you've set up something that everyone loves.
I can't get over the fact that you're in a t-shirt now. Like, I'm hoping we get to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. bench pressing with you by the end of this.
Yeah. It's summer, man. Sun's out, guns out. Except on the road to Moscow. You have this opportunity to do something that I think has a 100% approval rating with people who watch entertainment, which is cute people who clearly have chemistry falling in love. And you can, so how are you going to do it? That's an opportunity. And then they write these scenes and things and they nail it, you know, with the things that you want, the hesitation, the interruption, the fact shows up at the exact wrong time. But like, that's what we want from this type of entertainment. And that type of entertainment is not necessarily always served in the same meal as the family dinner in episode 6. But guys, this is Chaos Menu. Mm-hmm. And we're getting the best of all the different dishes. And so I loved it. Like, did I fully understand the conceit of like, who's having this kind of like 19-year-old party when they're all in their mid to late 30s? I didn't fully, like, was this like old
things,
high school friends?
I think go differently in Chicago. They have house parties. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I was just unclear that they were all old so neighborhood.
Do you think
neighborhood
they're late
friends,
20s
right?
or mid 30s? She's finishing her residency, so I guess she'd probably be in her early 30s, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
I know a lot about medical school, so that tracks.
I mean, you could have done it. And in ways you did, like you got the gist. Uh-huh. You watched a lot of House in the early 2000s. Yeah, I mean, you start to lose it when you're like, so Bernthal, who's I think older than us, is the older brother of the family, so it's a large, but it doesn't matter. They take advantage of it and it's delightful and it's very sweet. I'm fully invested in them and I love that he brings her into the absolute craziness.
Right. And well, I think he's hoping he's going to bring her there and they're all going to be gone by then, right?
He definitely is, yes. But he should know better. I also want to say, Maddie Matheson is a good actor.
Yes. There are no bad actors on this show.
He is, that's crazy. It's crazy because, you know, Chris, I think there are very few examples that we can point to recently where someone being successful or famous in one field, and then they try to become an actor in a TV show. And, you know, I can't think of another example, not even on this podcast. But I would imagine that the odds are low of them also being good at acting. But weirdly, he's completely...
He's got a real character.
And he's present in every scene, and he's hanging with good actors.
And do you watch his YouTube at all?
No.
That's not who Maddie Matheson is.
Oh, I have seen him. Yes, I've seen his, who he is in the world.
Yeah, he's awesome. And you can tell a lot of his cooking is very influential on the cooking of the show. But I would say that he is doing a really good job as, like, a member of a rogues gallery of people that are in this guy's life. I think it's worth mentioning for 5 that they do a really great job in the show of having pop cultural conversations in the background. Mm. But not making it too obvious. So the replacement stuff that comes up a few times, and then
you mean like the needle drops?
Yeah, or no, but they talk about the replacements. Like I think
is that what they're
I
saying?
I think Feck is talking about the replacements, the electrician.
I couldn't.
To
I didn't pick up
him.
On it. Yeah,
he's like Tim. A lot of people like Tim, but Pleased to Meet Me is like you know.
Tim is better than Pleased to Meet Me.
Yes,
I'm not. I'm not.
I think the
down.
Highs of Tim are better than the highs of Pleased to Meet Me.
Oh, see, I don't see. I think
you think Alex Chilton and Can't Hardly Wait are better than anything on Tim
and Skyway, like they're like and Valentine are all on Pleased.
Do you just like arguing with me now?
Yes, but Tim is a better album
because I'm agreeing with you.
It seems like you're not.
I was agreeing with you.
You're just kind of an all shook down guy, I guess.
I just love the fact that like they'll have those little snippets. So Richie's super into Ridley Scott. And shit, and then, you know, Feck's obviously the music guy.
But the music thing, I do want to talk about that because I think it could potentially be divisive, and I say potentially in that someone has texted me recently being like, that's the only thing I don't like about the show is it's just these, like, thunder, like, hammer hammering obvious needle drops. Because they take it. Needle drops are really powerful, especially when you have a show that is working emotionally. Sometimes you don't need that. I have said repeatedly, it is who they are.
Yes.
And it is cooking with soul.
And I also think that it's ingenious the way that they have gone back to certain songs as themes.
I thought
for
that was
different
interesting.
Parts of the show. So Strange Currencies is obviously
that's the
Claire,
Carmi
and Carmi's theme song.
Because there's
point.
No score, right?
I think that there is some music. You will see in later episodes there are some things going on that I think that they are using. Yeah.
I think the other issue, potential criticism, and I'm strawmanning this because I'm not on this team with needle drops, is that you are trying to communicate emotions that you're unable to do in script and or show off your cool music taste or whatever. And I would say that to me, it's more like, you know, why is this sauce so good in the restaurants? Because they fucking put butter on it.
That's right.
And that's kind of how I feel about them consistently choosing the most important songs of our teenage years. But that it just is the show, and there is something that is big-hearted and shameless about it in its emotional storytelling.
Would the show be the show without this music? Maybe. Like, I think it would be fine.
It's wild and six when it's just like, yeah, Don't Dream It's Over is playing for these 26 seconds. It's right. Nuts.
So,
but
great. Let's go into six.
It works.
Because the music in six is the first time where I was like, distracted by the music a little bit, where I was like, is this music playing in this house?
Right.
And is this a mix or something? Or is this just like...
Pete made the mix. That's he got in trouble for it.
Okay, so six is the one that I think a lot of people have been talking about. It's clearly the kind of the takeout episode of the season. It's a standalone flashback episode that introduces several new characters, some of whom we've heard about in passing, but the most important ones are obviously Bob Odenkirk playing Uncle Lee, who is mentioned in the first episode, I believe, when they're taking out the loan from Cicero.
For Oliver Platt's character.
Yeah, and he has a company with Cicero. I want to say up top,
yeah,
I don't understand who's related to who and who is just being called cousin or uncle.
I thought you had an org chart, Brizzotto family org chart.
Because there's obviously, the Brizzottos are Italian. Then there seems to be a Polish wing of the family.
Yeah, and Michael is Jewish.
And I would...
They're Jewish
we
son.
Do not have a father figure in the house. I imagine he's dead, right?
It seems to be a point of contention with Michael. I'm only joking about his Judaism because John Bernthal is
I understand.
Member of the tribe.
Yeah. He's like,
which
it's my father's
about.
House,
yes.
Which means I imagine that he has passed away.
Yes.
But these other guys are around. They would not be named Brizzotto, presumably.
The facts also... play a role.
Around. Yeah.
I have no idea who Sarah Paulson is in relation to them, other than all families have the one cousin that lives in New York.
Yeah.
Everybody has that cousin.
And she's a Brizzotto, though.
Seems to be. And John Mulaney is her husband.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I agree with you. I'm glad you said that.
So a little
up front.
Bit of confusion.
Can I say one other thing up front? Up
yeah.
top, I thought Oliver Platt is low-key giving my favorite performance on the show. I think he's fucking unbelievable in every scene he's in and elevates the show beyond a very, already very high place.
Okay. I agree with you. He's doing incredible work. So, one thing that I've seen people discuss online about this is that essentially what The Bear did so well in its initial sort of presentation is the thing that TV still does better than movies is, hey, we found these people.
Yes.
And now, on one hand, like, you're going to fall in love with them. The problem with that is that you're probably not going to be able to think about Jeremy Allen White not being Carmi or Ayo Edebiri not being Sid, you know? But you're going to fucking discover these people and just like in Mad Men and just like in Lost and just like in Cheers, like, you're just going to have this investment with these people. This kind of upsets the apple cart where you walk in, you get this opening kind of family reunion between Bernthal, Abby Elliott, and Jeremy Allen White's characters. And they go into this house as a house of a fucking thousand Twitter's faves casting choices.
Yeah.
John Mulaney, Sarah Paulson, Bob Odenkirk, and then Jamie Lee Curtis.
Gillian Jacobs,
and then Jamie Lee Curtis as the matriarch of the Brizzotto family, as Donna, aka Dee Dee.
Yeah.
Did you find that distracting at all?
I am torn. Because I have a lot of positive things to say about this episode. And I think that you know, these, it's episodes like these and the similarly bravura episode from season one, that was the Oneer episode, where you see that Chris Storer, who's the creator of the show and the co-showrunner, is a filmmaker and wants to make indie films. And what an opportunity he had to make one with this cast and with the directorial flourishes and the cuts to the buzzer. I mean, it's the type of filmmaking that he clearly excels at. And there is, contrary to what I said about men doing whatever they want earlier in the podcast, when people are following their muse fully, it can be pretty thrilling and exciting to see. I also continue to think that this show is more interested in digging deep into emotional interactions and conversations and writing than almost anything else on television. I think in a completely different way, Succession was excellent at that too. But characters who you come to know, love, understand, empathize with, coming to the table with knives out or forks out makes for incredible stuff. And the entry points to these conversations, the context, like we were saying with Robert Townsend as Sydney's dad last week, like that anecdote, that they're all so well chosen that I just find it incredible. And that the type of emotional narcissism displayed by the mother figure, by their mother, you don't often see things like that. And it was remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, he was like, what if we did Long Day's Journey into Night in the middle of this bear season?
So I have nothing, but I'm in awe. I'm impressed. I'm taken with it. There are scenes that I would like to rewatch. The casting is a thing. The casting is a thing. Now, I also understand that there's an element of this, which is this isn't the show. The way everything about this was different. The credits at the beginning and then at the end, it said the Berzotto family as played by, almost as if.
I think the title of the episode is The Berzottos, right?
Yes.
Or like it, when they, because he does like the Goodfellas, the titles going across the screen thing in the beginning with the Darlene Love song playing. I think it's called The Berzottos.
Yes. And then it said as played by or whatever at the end. And it does feel like a rep theater doing these memories, you know, and showing us things. So you can get into the spirit of it. But it was a stretch for me at times. You know, I think
the problem is that when I go through every single one of the performances, I'm like, I loved it.
No one was bad.
Paulson was amazing. I thought Paulson and Mulaney were actually like kind of mesmerizing in some ways. Like Paulson seemed to fully be a person who has left this family, is successful in New York, likes to have a cigarette, is living with this guy, you know.
This is the type of role that she always seems most comfortable, like she wants to play. You know?
But like I feel like we often get pushed to, like towards her doing like the decathlon in her performances.
I agree.
It's like, hey, look at her just do a 400 meter run here.
This is just a real person now.
And I thought Mulaney was kind of a revelation, you know. I did not know he could act and be in a scene like that. Not really familiar. Has he acted a lot?
No, I mean, I don't think you've seen the Chippendale Rescue Rangers movie.
Is he a voice in that? Or is
he and Sandberg. And but he's quite compelling in that.
I mean, like, just being a real dude in a
not
thing.
Really, no.
No. Pretty amazing. Odenkirk is incredible.
Yeah, Odenkirk lives in this
world.
Is
fucking incredible.
And it's the other thing that, you know, one of the joys of this, because this show fucking loves things so deeply. It's big. It's like a big love. And they fucking love actors. And they're listening to actors and they're paying attention to actors. And so what have we watched Bob Odenkirk do over the last, not just 25 years, but particularly like last 10 years, is go from like a funny Chicago guy to a funny actor guy to an actor guy to a what's underneath all of it. He will go to the basement and bring it up.
Yeah.
And so what does he do just in this one episode? And I imagine we'll see more of him is literally that arc that I just said.
Yeah.
It says, ask him to do the thing that he fucking does now. It was awesome.
Bernthal, kind of a bad wig.
Yeah.
Kind of a fucking knockout performance.
That guy can really do it.
Him at the head of the table with the fork scene is, you're like, in the when you're watching it, you are at the table where you're like, Mike, please don't do this. Mikey, please don't do this. Mikey, please
don't. And part of that is the brilliant coverage and editing so that what we live with as much as his impotence and rage and whatever he's working through, we also see everyone sitting quietly in horror. So we feel their horror as well. Do you want to do Wayne Jenkins at the Feast of the Seven Fishes? Like, is this an opportunity
for
you?
I want to actually,
I just want to know.
It's cool to see him. He is actually he's an amazing actor.
He's an amazing actor.
And his like their little moment in the pantry where he's like, tell me three things about Copenhagen. Like, it's just so fucking tender and amazing. Like their whole thing with like, Claire's a fucking wizard. Like, it's all that shit is so good. I'm throwing flowers around because I'm going to get up to the point, which I don't really want to do, which is that the Jamie Lee Curtis performance didn't really work for me personally.
Yeah. No, not on
the level of which the other performances did. And I don't think it's her fault or anybody's fault. It was just a personal thing. And I say this as somebody who has been in dinners like this before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's not unfamiliar to me, even as an only child, to see this kind of stuff.
Well, you're a great guest.
I try to invite you to all. Yeah, I try to do. I'll do whatever you guys need. You know, I'm a good middle.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm of two minds about it because, again, I think that the show is so big-hearted and it loves the people who are willing to love it back and give them so much.
Yeah.
You know, and show up, and that's what so much of this episode was. I mean, it was people being like, "You've given me this opportunity. I'm going to play in the sandbox." And I bumped a little bit more on Mulaney carrying so much weight, but he didn't really.
When he's just like, yes, I have $500 because I'm a 43-year-old man.
He's not. He fits in.
Yeah,
he does fit in. And since they were doing this at a certain point, it would have been weird not to cast people who were noteworthy. You do get down the line of like, how are any of these people related to each other? But I'm willing to accept.
Apparently
it.
Not though.
They're not right
because so, there's an Italian. I mean, like, of course, classic Italian guy Sarah Paulson. But you know.
Exactly. I think I'm circling around to Jamie Lee Curtis too to say that. Speaking of love and affection, like Abby Elliott didn't have a ton to do the first season.
Dude, I thought Abby Elliott was great in this episode.
She played the silence at the end as well as anyone played anything in the episode. She was destroyed. And it was a deep wound, you know. And that's acting. That's an incredible performance. I totally agree with you. The other standout moment for me was the moment when Oliver Platt agrees to pretend that he's given Richie a job.
Yes.
You know, the three of them playing that scene together like they've been squash partners for years. And Eben Moss-Bachrach, just the empathy in everything he does, even the funniest shit. We should also make room for Jeremy Allen White, who is the best scene partner maybe in anything at the moment, to play the same character, who is a wall half the time, but can get in the fucking arena with any of these actors and be generous enough to let them own the scene is really something while still coming out as the star of the
show. I
really
like the fact, so we just did Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade on the rewatchables.
Yes.
And one thing that's really kind of, if you watch it with this, knowing this, if you watch the flashback in the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, it's the River Phoenix scene.
Yes.
And where he goes and he finds the Cross of Coronado and then he runs through this circus that's on a train. Mm-hmm. And every single thing that happens to him in each car is why, this is why Indy has a bullwhip. Now this is why he has a hat. This is why he's afraid of snakes. It's like the day that made Indiana Jones. I'm so glad that this is not the dinner that made Carmy.
No.
Carmy's already fucked up.
Yeah.
Carmy already can't talk. Carmy's already gone to Copenhagen to get away from his family. Everybody, like, even when the dinner goes atomic, what does Odenkirk say that makes Mikey flip? He's like, that was bound to happen, and now that it has, maybe we can all relax.
Yeah.
And, you know, even in right before it starts, when they're yelling at each other, and Michelle is like, we have liftoff. You know, like, this is a annual event, if not more than that. They are all aware that this is going to happen. This is all already why they are the way they are. We don't find out that day that this is why Carmy wanted to be a chef.
No, we understand now. And he's also given us this. That's also a testament to the performance in all the episodes leading up to this. Is, you know how you, if you did the X-ray, it wouldn't be dogs inside of him. It would be this dinner.
Yeah.
Right? That's why he is the way he is. It's why he seeks immaculate control.
But it's this dinner, like, in totality. It's not this specific dinner.
Exactly.
Like, this might be the dinner where mom drove her car through the front door.
But there are other ones.
I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that.
We were on the exit ramp to talking about Jamie Lee, and then we...
Oh, I don't really... Well, I guess what I want to say is...
And went back to the highway and kept driving.
I guess the only thing I want to say is I really love, for her, this era of her career, where she's like, I have been an actor and
absolutely
a performer.
This has nothing to do with, like...
No, but what I mean is, and you're not arguing this either, where she's just like, she's chaos menu. She's like, fuck it. Like, let's go. I used to be pigeonholed into these types of parts, and I looked this way, and I did these things, and it was fine, and, you know, she's memorable and great. And she's fucking going for it now. And that's incredible for any performer at any age.
Yeah. And I think
this
that
and in Everything Everywhere, I respect the hell out of it, even if I'm not. Her as the matriarch of this family, of this loud Italian-American family, was a bump for me.
I think maybe some of it was just that, like, it distracted me because I was just like, that's Jamie Lee Curtis. And that's not her fault.
Yeah.
And some of it might have been that her portrayal of someone who is going through the mental health crisis that mm-hmm. this character is obviously experiencing, I don't know. Is it enough to say that it didn't quite work for me. But that is in and of itself just like, I want to like kind of like put it in perspective. Like,
totally.
I still thought the episode was incredible. Well, and I thought she actually was convincing as the person who holds so much sway.
Yeah.
And holds so much real estate over these people.
I also think it's worth noting that the reason this episode wouldn't work, and I think that it did work, the thing that would stop it from working is that if there were stars at that table, not actors, and there were recognizable actors, absolutely everyone showed up to subsume themselves in the world of this show.
Mm-hmm. And probably only for a few days or whatever, however long they
absolutely.
Shot us, yeah.
It must have been remarkable. That must have been a remarkable time to shoot and then not talk about for however long they didn't talk about it. But it's really special and it's another big swing. But yeah.
Maybe it's an example of like, I don't have like a big family. And so I don't know chaos like that.
Well, I live in fear of chaos like that because there is no chaos in a very proper only child family, right? Like maybe there ought to be a little more chaos. Yeah. I thought before I watched this episode. Now I'm like, no, I'll sit in silence and occasionally talk about British novels. That's probably preferable to this. It's wild, but like, and again, if we get the chance to talk to Chris and Joanna about the show, which I hope we do, like, it's just a remarkable compass that they have, especially after the success and the hype of the first season, to just deeply and just seemingly effortlessly understand what their show is.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we do, whether we're doing it in Copenhagen or we're doing it in the past in a nightmare dinner. We are still this show, and this is where our fences are. And, you know, I think that's when things go astray.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder whether or not it's like she has to go big because she has to have this kind of, she has to make this kind of impression on viewers to understand that, like,
they're all in terror of her.
Yeah.
They're all abused right. by her, by this behavior. Even though, you know, it's not traditional physical abuse, but this
did you get the
abusive.
Impression that she and Odenkirk's character had hooked up at some point? And
yeah.
That's why Michael is like, oh, we're doing this again? Or was he just trying to give her a job?
Well, that was when I started to get a little confused about the org chart because, yeah, there's a lot of flirtation with both uncles and there's her sense, you know, that she's sort of sexualized and flirty. I got that sense that there was something, but it's not really made clear.
That was all I had for this.
Now, you've watched ahead secretly, right?
I have. I finished the season.
It goes off a cliff, right?
It's terrible. Yeah.
Thank you.
Especially when they find the hatch.
Wow.
No.
Which one?
Can I give you a little crumb?
Will you let me know, blink twice if Odenkirk is a Skrull?
I think that the seventh episode, the next episode. Yeah. Is my favorite episode of The Bear.
Really?
Yes.
Full, like, whole series?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow, I can't wait to watch it here in front of you guys at the studio when we record on Thursday.
There's a lot of fucking baseball to watch.
The best part when I was watching on my laptop is that there was, I think it was the, maybe it was the Mulaney thing, or one of the Mulaney things that was pretty funny. And you both looked and you were like, are you laughing at the thing that I'm doing? Like, you, I don't know, you were watching something else. And
no,
you're like,
I
are
think
you
me
with
and
me?
Kaya were talking and you were like laughing. And I was like, are you laughing at what we're talking about?
Because you were talking about me.
No. I can't remember what we were talking about.
You were talking about the way baseball has been degraded by these changes.
That's a really good segue to say that we were produced by Kaya McMullen today.
Thank God. Thank God Kaya is here
and,
for this. Thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday to conclude mm-hmm. our watch of The Bear. So 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So a lot
so
of
we've done
you,
6. 7, 8, 9, 10.
So a big, healthy serving for you.
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'd love to talk about I Am Virgo.
Oh, yeah.
The Boots Riley show. So maybe we could do that for Thursday as well. And I hope we get some headlines.
You know who I've seen?
Hey, you know what I didn't know? Is that Fran Drescher is like in charge.
She's the president of SAG.
She is like the fulcrum on which all of Hollywood swings right now.
Yeah.
She do you think swing on a fulcrum? Hinges.
She took over that esteemed position from Gabrielle Carteris, who was Andrea on 90210.
Well, I watched a video of Fran Drescher giving some updates on negotiations with the studios, and I could not hear the nanny talking to me.
Do you think that's a plus for SAG or a
I have no comment on that.
Okay.
I have no comment. I mean, what if I become an actor one day?
What if? I remember some of those Grantland videos. You did that.
Yeah,
but
I don't have a cart.
You were a scab? You didn't get any benefits for that?
It's called being independent.
I thought you were, is SAG-AFTRA, like, you are Actors Equity, but not SAG, right? Like,
yeah.
You can perform on Broadway.
Definitely can. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And would you only like to make an announcement?
Only in hair, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
I saw that there was a new production of Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along coming this fall with Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff, and I imagined you were the third call.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Okay. The Boots Riley show, I'm excited to see. He's been on the picket lines. I've seen him a couple times.
There you go.
Cool.
Any
hat.
Updates from you? We want to give anybody at minute 74. Do you want to let us know how things are going?
It's not great, Bob. I know. I mean, there have been.
Well, you have a great tan. That's what's important.
Thanks. Well, that's from right field. The right field line. No, I mean, there's no negotiations. That not because the writers won't, but because the studios. This is the playbook. They're waiting until 90 days into the strike, and then they can start force majeuring and canceling overall deals.
I see.
At which point, then there might be negotiation, but no, there's absolutely nothing.
Okay. I hate to hear that.
Waiting on Fran, really. Fran's got to bring this home.
Thanks to Kaya. Thanks to all our listeners, and thanks to Andy Greenwald.
That's me.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.